to the real world.
JMR, Just Measures Radio, is on the air.
Your path has led you to the Tinker's Shop here on Just Measures Radio. I welcome you. Please come in, sit down, have a seat. We all must remember that we are the library for those who come after us, and we must share our knowledge with those who need it.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be. Since I found serenity, you can't take the sky from me.
And a very good evening to you, all my friends out there in JMR land, and those who might be listening to the podcast in the future. Welcome to the Tinker's Shop here on Just Measures Radio. And as always, I'm the Tinker, and I'll be possibly being joined by my usual sidekick, the Tinker's Bell, tonight, and so we should probably get started. Today is the 15th of February, 2014. And again, as I said, welcome. Tonight, what I'm going to do here is going to basically do, a brewing 101, because in brewing, that can cover many subjects. You have obviously, homemade wine, that's a brewing process, homemade beer, and there's even homemade root beers and homemade sodas. So what we'll do tonight here is I'm just going to go ahead and just kind of give a brief, a light overview on the steps that are required to do brewing. Brewing beer, in and of itself, isn't rocket science. And there are a lot of kits out there these days that people can buy. For example, I've seen them up at Fleet Farm. You know, you'll have a beer kit there, which is just basically a plastic barrel. And you'll have some things to go with it. And, well, let's put it this way. You know, perhaps you've been to like something like I said, like Fleet Farm, or perhaps you've been to a homebrew supply store somewhere, and you'll see some of the many of the commercial beer kits that are packaged for the beginning homebrewer. And usually these kits are composed of an attractively labeled can of hopped malt extract, and they'll have a package of yeast in there and easy instructions for them. You know, these things usually just say, you know, add sugar and water. And, if you follow that sort of instructions, you're going to be real disappointed with the results. What you'll end up with is, probably have a bitter disappointment due to these, lousy instructions that, you know, come on the can. You know, the instructions will say something like, add 2 pounds of corn sugar or table sugar, boil it, if you want to. Ferment for 1 week at room temperature and bottle after that. Well, the end result, you're going to have sparkling pond water. Because a lot of times these yeasts are, they're getting old. You know, with these things, you need to look at the date that was manufactured for starters. Anyone who's done any baking, for example, you'll know that yeasts, you know, do have a shelf life. And, you know, if you have one of these kits that's been put together for you by someone else, you know, who knows how long ago it was made or even where it was made. And that can make a big difference in the quality of your end product. Those of you who've listened here on my show in the past undoubtedly have learned I'm one who is not real big on kits that other people have made. Oh, yes. I guess I've always been a do-it-yourselfer. With that said, you know, the kits that one can get, you can actually be truthful. You can actually produce a drinkable beer from them. And if nothing else, it's a good starting point. But one thing you definitely will have to remember is you don't necessarily have to follow the instructions on the kit. What would actually be a better bet would be if one gets one of these kits, they can have good materials in there. The big caution, like I just had mentioned, is the yeast. That's going to be your, shall we say, the determining factor on being able to use, a pre-made kit. What I would suggest doing is, if you do decide to go with a kit form, that's good and fine. You can do that. That way you get most of your materials together in one place to start with. But I would suggest finding a local homebrew shop. You can sometimes find those by way of, check your phone books, the local ones. Or you could actually go out online and do a search for brewing supplies. Or, some other hints for it. You could look for hops or dry malt extract. Things of that sort, as for keywords if you're doing a web search. So that's, kind of a, just some ideas. I suppose, I think before I really get rolling on this whole thing is, I should probably, kind of give a little bit of a history of brewing and talk a little bit about, what's all involved. And also go through some other definitions. I know it's kind of like I'm teaching a class in school or something, but if you get the basics down on a subject, then one can always, shall we say, freewheel from there or be a pathfinder in brewing. You can experiment somewhat with it. Of course, I would say, for the first time or two of making your own brews, follow a recipe. And once you have that down, then you can go from there. So, a little bit of history. Brewing. There's probably been brewing being done for hundreds, if not thousands of years. The first brewers were probably, wandering nomads or quote-unquote cavemen. Because if someone would take, for example, harvest a lot of fruit, wild fruits, berries, strawberries, blueberries, whatever. Fruits that are very juicy. And if they had that in some sort of semi-closed container, and if they would forget about the berries for a day or so, or if, say, they got caught in a rainstorm or something, eventually, if the berries would have been left just, sitting in some sort of container with water, you basically have everything you need there to make some homemade skull pop. you have water, you have the fruit in there, which would give you some flavorings, and you have the sugars from the fruits, and all wild fruits, and probably most vegetables that you harvest, will have wild yeasts on them. Obviously, not all yeast is appropriate for fermenting to alcohol, but it can happen. And so probably, you probably had some guy who had a bad day, or some ladies that had a bad day, and just didn't have enough fruit to do much of anything with, Or they may have had an extremely good day and had extra fruit and just forgot about them. Went out and went gathering the next day and came back and went, ooh, this stuff is, that's kind of funny looking. But, it does have kind of an interesting smell, and they possibly tried it, and that would be the introduction or the beginning of early country wines, as they're referred to these days, or fruit wines. And, well, let's do this. Wines. Well, I'll do a little bit on that, and then we can continue on with the other types of brewing. Traditionally, wine is basically, like I said, you know, a fruit or a fruit juice that's been fermented to produce alcohol. These days, technically speaking, wine, you know, with a capital W on it, is generally produced from some variety of grapes. And you can have, like I said, you know, naturally fermented wines, which, you know, work off of the natural yeasts that are found on the fruit. For grape wine, what they'll do is take fully ripe grapes, they'll press them out, thin them down with some water, if it's appropriate, and basically seal it up in a container with an airlock on it, so you can't get extra oxygen coming in from the outside, which can affect the flavors of the wine. As the yeast that's on the grapes attack the sugars, they convert the sugars in your must, which is the term that's used to describe the grape juice and the water. They'll attack the, like I said, they'll attack the sugars that are in there. And as the yeast digests the sugar, they release two products. Carbon dioxide, which is basically the bubbles, and alcohol. And if you let this process go to completion without getting any extra outside air in, you can end up with a wine. Wines can also, like I said before, can be made from any fruit, whether it be, you know, blackberries, cherries, wild grapes, apricots, even apples, and other larger stone fruits. And there's also variants on wines where people use dandelion flowers and other flowers from plants. Some of the earliest known beer dregs, I guess you could say, have been discovered in both Mesopotamia, you know, modern-day Iraq and Iran, and in the Nile Valley. And these both date from probably, roughly 6,000 years ago. And let's see. Again, it was probably an accidental process. Well, actually, I'm sure it was an accidental process. It wasn't deliberate. They probably didn't go, well, we got all this extra grain here. Let's just dump some water on it and see what happens. You know, that would not have been the case. Probably had early people storing barley, because that's what the predominant ingredient is in beer. They were probably storing it in some sort of earthen vessel, you know, a fired clay pot or a storage container, and it would have possibly, again, if they didn't have it sealed properly and got caught with rain and they didn't realize it, they could have ended up with a jar of barley being left sitting with water in it. And that would have eventually naturally fermented, you know, before it rotted, hopefully. And again, someone probably went, smells good, let's taste this. Or, oh, this isn't so good, but the stuff is wet. But they may have tried, you know, tasting it. And, you know, thought, oh, this isn't too bad. That kind of leads us into a little bit more here of things. Modern beers are made from what's called malted barley. The malting process is where barley is soaked in water and, you know, most of the way drained off and sprouted. You know, basically it's the same process where one could make sprouts. You know, some people have let's see, what do you call it? Green sprouts, you know, like alfalfa sprouts. There we go. And also other cultures in the world do sprouted beans, you know, mung beans, you know, the bean sprouts that you see in Oriental cooking, Chinese, Japanese, Vietnamese cooking. They'll all use sprouted mung beans. Well, to malt barley, you use the same process where the barley seeds or grains are allowed to soak in some water. You drain it off. You put it into a container where it's able to be ventilated. And, you know, you wash the grains every day. You get them wet again, and you let them sprout. Well, the same thing is done with barley when they produce barley malt. The barley is soaked down and allowed to sprout. And, you know, a barley seed is, you know, similar in size to like a wheat seed. And what they do is generally let the sprouts get to, say, 3/8, half inch long. And what's happening when the barley is sprouting? Inside the barley, it's predominantly starches. But with the process of sprouting, that starch is converted to sugars. And that's basically what you want in malted barley. It allows it to ferment easier. So the way it's done, like I said, after it sprouts, they take and dry the barley. And basically, when they dry it, they have it in large tumblers now. Used to be that you just spread the grains out and just not, you know, wet them down again. But the modern process is once the grains have sprouted, they dry them in a drum, you know, basically a tumbler drum. And as the sprouts dry up and get totally dried, you know, they'll break off. And, you know, that's more or less a byproduct, a waste product or whatever, from malting the barley. What you want, or what they want when they make barley malt, is the barley itself with the majority of the sugars being still intact. Now, once they do this drying process of the barley, they also will roast it at the same time. And they go all the way from almost no roasting at all, basically where they've dried the barley up, to the to knock off the dried sprouts. And they will go all the way to having the grains roasted to the point where they're almost black. And that's trying to think of the proper terminology on that. I believe they call it a Viennese malt. The first stages where it's not roasted as much, you'll have like a crystal malt or a light malt, and it runs the full gamut, all the way from a pale malt, which is basically an off-white color, to just about burned black. And as you go through it, you have a definite difference in flavor. And like I said, you know, it's right now what I'm doing here is just kind of basically giving you an overview. In the next, you know, couple, 3-4 weeks here, I'll be probably getting more in depth on the different factors in brewing a good beer. So I think perhaps at this point I'm going to go ahead and throw a small tune in here. I actually have 2 or 3 different pieces of music here that I'm going to play tonight. And this particular one, hopefully those of you who are bothered by, you know, strong language, you know, please forgive me on this, but it does use a little bit of language in this one that I don't necessarily approve of, but it's all, I guess you could say, all done in good fun. And this was called Garnet's Homemade Beer, and it was originally done to give Garnet Rogers a hard time because he got into doing some home brewing at one point, and his brother Stan Rogers, who I've played some of his music on the show here before, said, yeah, I'm going to have some fun here at Garnet's expense, and so they did. And this performance is actually done by a group of people in, they were basically in a living room. They just were having a good time, and they decided they were going to do their version of the song. So I actually have another one that was done by a Canadian choral union group, but this one just has a little bit more of the, I'd say, the original spirit of singing the song.
Oh, the year was 1978. How I wish I'd never tried it now. When a score of men were turned quite green by the scummiest ale you've ever seen, God damn them all. I was told this beer was worth its weight in gold, we'd feel no pain, shed no tears. But it's a foolish man who shows no fear at a glass of Garnet's homemade beer.
Now feel free to come on the How I Wish, okay?
Okay. Oh, Garnet Rogers, cried the town, how I wish I'd never tried it now. For 20 brave men, all massacred, who would taste for him his homemade brew, goddamn them all. I was told this beer was worth its weight in gold, we'd feel no pain, shed no tears. But it's a foolish man who shows no fear at a glass of Garnet's homemade beer. This motley crew were a sickening sight, how I wish I'd never tried it now. There was Caveman Dave with his eyes in bags, he's a hard-boiled liver and a staggers and jags, goddamn them all. I was told this beer was worth its weight in gold, we feel no pain, shed no tears. But it's a foolish man who shows no fear at a glass of Garnet's homemade beer. We hadn't been there but an hour or two, how I wish I'd never tried it now. When a voice said, give me some homemade brew, and Steely Stanhove into view, goddamn them all. I was told this beer was worth its weight in gold, we'd feel no pain, shed no tears. But it's a foolish man who shows no fear at a glass of Garnet's homemade beer. Now Steely Stan was a fighting man, how I wish I'd never tried it now. He was 8 foot tall and 4 foot wide, said, pass that jug or I'll tan your hide, goddamn them all. I was told this beer was worth its weight in gold, we'd feel no pain, shed no tears. But it's a foolish man who shows no fear at a glass of Garnet's homemade beer. Stan took one sip and pitched on his side, how I wish I'd never tried it now. Garnet was smashed with a gut full of dregs, and the breath set fire to both me legs, goddamn them all. I was told this beer was worth its weight in gold, we'd feel no pain, shed no tears. But it's a foolish man who shows no fear at a glass of Garnet's homemade beer. So here I lie in me 23rd beer, I wish I'd never tried it now. It's been 10 years since I felt this way, on the night before me wedding day. Goddamn them all. I was told this beer was worth its weight in gold, we'd feel no pain, shed no tears. But it's a foolish man who shows no fear at a glass of Garnet's homemade beer.
Like I said, I do apologize for some of the language in that one, but it's kind of it's just kind of a fun parody song. There was a song that Stan Rogers did a lot of years ago that was called Barrett's Privateers. And it was about some privateers during the American Revolutionary War. So let's, where to go from here? I guess perhaps what I should probably do is just say that in brewing, you gotta have a sense of humor. The stuff is, there's so many places where when you're brewing, if you mess up, then you'll end up with a mess. So, according to, there was one gentleman by the name of, Charlie Papazian, who's basically written the quote-unquote Bible for homebrewing, that, well, in his book, he just, all the way through, he'll, when there's steps that can get a little quirky in homebrewing, he just always keeps repeating, and it's kind of like his mantra. It's like, relax, sit down, have a homebrew. So, yeah, that's kind of the whole thing with it. So let's see here. It looks like we're approaching the half-hour point here, kind of close. So I think what I should probably do here is I'm going to go ahead here and drop a couple of our station breaks in here just to, well, basically to do things like they're supposed to be done. You know, every so often we need to put the station breaks in here to identify us.
Hurricanes. Tornadoes. Western firestorms. Earthquakes. Financial collapse. Government upheaval. What happens when Walgreens closes? Whom do you turn to? You turn to Kat Ellis and myself, Chuck Hudson, on the Medi-Chat and learn how combat medicine and alternative herbal remedies can help keep you going no matter what. The Medi-Chat, live 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern on the Just Measures Radio Network.
Yes, and now we're back. Now, continuing out with our Brewing 101 session here on the Tinker's Shop. Yes. Yeah, after Garnet's homemade beer, you know, if we come up with a brew that's as bad as that, we probably would have to consult with Chuck in the Medic Shack here to help us survive the mess. Anyway. I guess that's neither here nor there. Let's see. Well, why don't I get into a little bit of definitions here? I did cover a little bit here shortly before the break here, you know, talking about malted barley. Like I said, malted barley is barley that has been sprouted and then dried. The sprouting process converts the basic starches that are in the grain into sugars. And the dried sprouted barley is referred to as barley malt. The barley malt is, you know, ready to use for brewing at that point. But again, like I said, there's different types of malted barley, running the whole gamut from just a raw malted barley to a roasted barley, which can be all the way from a very light form to an extremely dark one. These malted barleys in this sort are what is used in a whole grain brewing. And the whole grain brewing process is done. Now, this is just a generalized one. I'm going to, you know, get into the specifics again in a later show. Like I said, this is just a kind of an overview. But if you use just the whole grains, you will take the malted barley and you basically steep it in water. It's done roughly at about 135 degrees. It's held there for a given period of time. I'll just put it that way because it depends on the specific malted barley that you're using. But it's roughly about 30 minutes, and they call this a protein rest. It's done at around 135 degrees. It's after that, it's brought up to a slightly higher temperature, and the slightly higher temperature is where your starch conversions and the sugar conversions are worked on by, let's see, it's the amylase enzyme. And once the process has gone to completion, and that's done by you test it as it sets. You take out like a teaspoon of the liquid that you're steeping there. You take it to the side and you put one drop of iodine in. Iodine and starch have a very unique reaction. If you have a heavily starch-laden liquid and you put one drop of iodine into it, it'll turn black. That means there's starch is present. If all the starches have been converted to sugars, it'll just be kind of a, you know, this reddish brown color. So that's again, like I said, that's just kind of a generalized step in there. Once you get to the point where you're happy with, you know, the color on your test. At that point, then it gets brought up to the final heating level, which is about 155-158 degrees. Easy way to remember that. That's about the same temperature that alcohol evaporates at. So that's a very rough go-through of the process of extracting your sugars from your grains. At this point, once your starches have all been converted to sugars, you can drain off and do a process that they call sparging. Sparging is, again, where you run a little bit extra water through the grains that have been converted. Basically, what you're doing is you're washing out all the sugars out of the grains. And when you have that completed, that is what you call the sweet wort, W-O-R-T. Some people pronounce it wort. So, but, you know, it's your sweet wort. That's what you actually do the fermenting of. So, okay, so at that point, I'm going to pause, you know, the description of the brewing process there. So just go ahead and remember that. The other way of getting your sweet wort to ferment would be to use either a dry malt extract or a liquid malt extract. The biggest difference between a dry malt and a wet malt or a liquid extract is basically the liquid. For example, I've got a can here that, it's a German extract called Bierkeller. In other words, beer cellar. It's an unhopped, dark, premium German malt extract. And I'd picked this up probably five years ago. And I've, you know, had never gotten around to using this. But what we're going to be doing in the coming weeks here, I'm actually going to be using this particular can of malt extract along with, It's about a 3.5 pound bag of dry malt extract, and that's going to be a dark extract as well. And what we're going to be doing is making up a 5-gallon batch of a brew which I've come up with on my own, and it was kind of done tongue in cheek when I did it, but I refer to it as dark wisdom beer. And what it is it's a beer that's done, like I said, with an unhopped dark malt extract, the dark dry malt extract, and a bunch of different hops. And so what we'll have is, when we get through with it, it'll be a beer that usually comes out to, well, by the time I get through with my additions to beer, they usually come out to somewhere in the range of 7-9% alcohol. A very powerful beer. And hence the name Dark Wisdom, because this one will end up as, well, it'll be darn near black when we get through. It uses a couple, shall we say, amendments to the recipe. I use usually about 1/4 pound of a dark bitter cocoa, and I also use about 3/4 pound of demerara sugar, which is, well, it's a Caribbean sugar. That's where it got started. They also produce it down in Brazil these days. And it's a cane sugar that, it's along the lines of a raw sugar. It's a sugar that basically is, 3/4 of the way there. white sugar is basically cane sugar that, or beet sugar or corn sugar that's been crystallized and washed several times. So it's all pure and white and, you know, has nothing left to it except the sugars. Whereas the demerara sugar, it's basically cane sugar that's been basically cooked down until it's starting to crystallize, and then they just go ahead and crystallize it from there. They don't wash it, they don't clean it, they don't bleach it, they don't do anything to it. So it's gives a nice flavor addition to a beer. It's one I enjoy using. So, let's see here. See, I was going through definitions there, wasn't I? Well, let's see here. Another definition here. Okay. I was giving the definitions and differences between a dry and a liquid malt extract. The way they produce a dry malt extract, it's the extract of the maltodextrin from a sweet wort. Now, remember I'd said that term a few minutes ago here? I was saying that when you do the processing of the whole grain malt and you wash it out, basically, and you have come up with a sweet wort. Well, a dry malt extract is a sweet wort that they process a little bit further. The way they do it, they actually basically heat it up to steaming, and it's sprayed on the inside of a large rotating drum, a very fine mist. And what happens is when it hits the inside of the drum, which is heat, it will basically flash dry. And inside of this drum, there's the scrapers that are constantly rotating inside. And well, it's basically the same process they use in other industries to make powdered milk or dry milk. Only in this case, they're making a dried powdered malt extract instead of powdered milk. It's much lighter, easier to transport, and obviously they can charge more for it too. It's a little bit more of a finished product or a refined product, so it works quite well. So let's see here, where are we at? Well, let's see, we're at about 42 minutes here. So I think I'm going to just kind of take the bull by the horns here. Last night I had a tune that I was going to play that Tinkerbell wanted me to play. And it was done by Montgomery and Gentry. And again, I guess I can get away with it since this is my show tonight, but it's about Titty's beer. And if you listen to it carefully, it's a song that's one long double entendre. They're really not saying anything nasty in there, but boy, they really make it sound like they're being nasty. So please enjoy this one. This is, by the way, this song was recorded when they were on the road. They were actually having a good time one night at a bar concert that they were at, so the quality of this is not as good as one you hear on one of their albums, but it's kind of fun. So here we go. We'll put, Montgomery and Gentry on here. And please, ladies, don't hit me with the frying pan here. Like I said, Tinker's Bell put me up to this one.
He's gonna bottle up his own brew. six pack. He's gonna sell them by the pair and call it a wrap. Dolly, that was the next big thing. But Dolly Parton in his ad campaign selling titties, titties, titties beer. Just the thing to get you grinning ear to ear. Well,
actually a German law back it's hundreds of years old, but you have four things that's in beer. And, you know, believe it or not, I was looking right at the package and forgot the fourth thing. So, beer, water, beer is composed of water, barley, yeast, and hops. Yeah, it's like, you know, brain's kind of fading here. It's, been a long evening here trying to, remember everything to put this all together on a, I guess you could say a pre-record here, so that way then I'm less liable to lose part of the show here to, you know, Winamp glitches like we've had before. So anyway, that's four things. And we talked about yeast earlier. You know, a lot of times you have wild yeasts that can get begotten, and wild yeast will work. Belgian beers prove it. There's been several of the Belgian monastery beers, which they've been brewing the same beer there for, well, probably 1500 years or whenever Christianity got to Belgium. And they would literally have a brewing house at the monasteries. And it's gotten to the point these brewing houses, which are basically a historical site, the whole building or the whole structure is so permeated with brewing yeast is they barely have to put any yeast at all in when they make their sweet wort up and they boil the hops into the liquid and, you know, basically set their brewing containers open and let the yeast from the air get into the beer and ferment it. Once the things get going, obviously they cover it and go through an airlock or a blow-off tank. But they just basically are using the natural yeasts. Generally speaking, though, yeah, this is one of those general cases where, in other words, don't do it at home. Don't be relying on natural yeast in your house to get your beer going, because I'll guarantee you that You try that, and it's going to mess up on you. And you're going to end up like I mentioned way back here at the beginning of the night. You'll end up with some fizzly swamp water. It's not going to taste right. So cleanliness, in our case, if we do any brewing, needs to be, in this case, cleanliness is next to godliness. You know, because if you don't, you're going to have some god-awful beer. So, okay, so let me do this. I'm going to, we're kind of running out of time here tonight, so I'm going to go ahead and hit the last generalized subject here tonight, and that's about hops. Hops are what is used in beer to give it both the bitterness that's associated with beer and also for the aroma. And there's hundreds of varieties of hops that are grown throughout the world. Here in the United States, the majority of the hops that you find for sale commercially are produced out in the Oregon and the Washington state areas. And in those two areas, of those two areas, the majority of the hops are grown in the Willamette Valley in, I guess you could say, kind of south central Oregon. That has become the place to grow hops. Here in the, historically speaking, here in the United States, hops have been grown all over the place. But back in, I'm trying to remember here, I think it was the 1940s or the early 1950s, there started to be a problem in the East Coast. There used to be a lot of hops grown in Pennsylvania and Ohio. Again, obviously the winter temperatures in the east, northeast part of the United States are a lot colder than it is out in Oregon and Washington, but the summers are somewhat comparable. But what happened was, at the time period where I mentioned, they got a blight that occurred, and it basically became endemic throughout the whole area east of the Mississippi, and hops just would not grow. They just would flat outright die in the crop growing regions. Of course, with that said, I have three very nice hop vines that I have here in my yard that I planted a few years ago, and they're finally getting to the point where I'm able to harvest fresh hops in the fall. So it's still hit or miss. You'll get some years where nothing is produced, or the leaves on the hop plants get all crippled up, or start withering or whatever, and so you don't necessarily get a good crop. But I do have, what is it now? I think I have 4-gallon-sized Ziploc bags in my freezer, where I'm gonna be cracking them out this year as well to make some beer. Generally speaking, these days you'll get when you purchase hops. Like I said, they come from out in Oregon, and again, these days the hop supply has come back. They had a fire in the warehouse there, in the main warehouse where all the hops go through, back about 4 or 5 years ago, and hops got real difficult to get for a while. The price went sky high. But I was up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin here to a store where I get most of my brewing supplies these days, and they've actually have a lot of new ones in there. A lot of the old favorites. There's one called Fuggles. There's Mount Hood. Let's see, what else? Galena. Challenger. I can't even think of a lot of the names of them. But I actually picked up a couple new bags, and for this batch that I'm going to be doing here. And what I'm going to do is document the whole process of making a batch of beer, like I said. And like I said, what I have here, my left hand here, I have one called Falconer's Flight. This is a fairly new hop strain that some people have developed. And another one is called Mount Hood. So between the two of these I'm going to be using both of these and possibly some Fuggles, like I said, in making the beer. The Falconer's Delight, this is, they comment on here that it has an aroma that's both floral and citrus-like. And the Mount Hood has one call that they describe it as mild and somewhat pungent. So what I'll probably be doing is actually using the Mount Hood to start with for a bittering side of things. And that's put in first where it's done through most of your boil for making your beer. Once I get that done, I'll be going ahead and switching to the Falconer's Flight for the overtones or the aroma for the beer. Okay, so I think we're probably about as far as I should go tonight here, because I could go on. But and perhaps next week what I'm going to do is I'll go ahead here and probably go about mentioning, or heck with it, I'm just going to go ahead and talk about a little bit tonight real quick, and then I'll go ahead and segue out with a little bit of John Barleycorn. But the third category of thing that people can brew at home is homemade root beer or homemade colas, or even homemade ginger ale. And actually, again, I've got three packages here, one for each. And the way these are done is it's an amazingly simple process. Let's see here. Why don't I use the I'll just use the ginger ale one. What they have is it's basically a concentrated extract from ginger with some basic flavorings in there. And the way they're done is, I could crack the package open here and talk about it, but I'll just do it quickie, just a generalized instruction. Just like they'd said way back at the beginning of one of the beer kits, you basically get your extract, your flavoring extract, in the required amount of water. In this case, for these packages, it's about 4 gallons of water. You add, for the root beer, you add 8 cups of sugar. And once it's cooled down slightly, you add your yeast, you stir it up, once you got your yeast in there and dissolved, you bottle it up, and you leave it set in warmer temperatures for about 4 to 5 days, and your root beer is ready to drink. That's a real quick, real simple explanation of it. And don't try it this week. But like I said, I just needed to throw that in since I'd mentioned it way back at the beginning. So with that, I'm going to go ahead here and put a little bit of John Barleycorn in here. And then we'll segue on out. And so they can go ahead to the next program in the queue. So thank you very much for joining me here in the Tinker's Shop for the 15th of February of 2014. God bless. Thank you for joining me, and we'll see you next week here, where we're going to go ahead and get more into detail on how to brew some beer. Take care. See you next week. They've sown their pyro from God's farm.
so amazed the more. Let him stand till the midsummer's night, and he looked more pale and wan. But little Sir John's grown a long brown beard, so become a man. There's beer all in the barrel, and brandy in the glass. But the tall Sir John with his nut brown bowl threw the strongest man at last. There's beer all in the barrel, and brandy in the glass. But the tall Sir John with his nut brown bowl threw the strongest man. The sharp-edged scythes again to cut him off at the knee. They bowled him and tied him around his waist, treated him most barbarously. Hired men with a sharp-edged box to put him to the mat, and the load has served him worse than that, for he's bound him to the car.
Just Measures Radio is on the air.